Joining me to continue our discussion from our first hour is Sarah Frank. She's a mom. She's an activist. She's a medical marijuana patient. She is the executive director of the Boise Hemp Fest that's taking place on April 14th at the Julia Davis Park in Boise, Idaho. I will be there emceeing the event, speaking and presenting. So hope to see you all there. Please come out. Please help us out. And now, Sarah, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the personal toll of activism, though, because trying to fight this battle in Idaho, it's difficult. And you have, my hat's off to you, because you and I both know of a whole bunch of us Idahoans who are no longer in Idaho, because we just had to get the F out of that state. You are still there fighting, although from a little bit more safe vantage point just over the border in eastern Oregon. Let's talk about what you've been doing, because I understand that you were involved in some protests that then led to some legal trouble. So let's tell our listeners that story.
Well, it started as legal trouble with a protest planned. We had our first Moms for Marijuana, Idaho chapter Moms for Marijuana Smokeout happened in 2010, okay. And then in 2011 again. And we were dealing with the Boise police at that time, and it made the news. The police said they didn't smell anything. We said, you're not helping our cause. But it was a good thing. There wasn't anybody who was arrested or cited.
But this was a smokeout, though? Actual cannabis, yes. Smoking in the streets of Boise?
Rolling joints on Front Street.
Literally. All right. All right.
but that was 2011, 2010, 2011. And then after that, I became an Idaho refugee. I moved to Portland. It was a great adventure going that way. And then shortly after that, I moved to Washington and became a patient up there as well. And then I moved home again. And upon moving home, it became issues for obtaining medication, my health just started decreasing, but I still, I still used my medicine despite the law, because my health to me is more important than a law that's 47 years old and based on lies. So I chose that, and I did that for my health. There was a point when my daughter Lily had to move to California to try to get it so we could use CBD, or not CBD, a whole plant, to treat her MRSA that she acquired when she was in the foster care system in Washington.
Oh, geez.
And so she moved down there, and unfortunately her father couldn't afford to live down there, so she ended up coming back. But that was the catalyst for the New Year's smokeout. I was upset. My daughter was gone. I was mad at Idaho, because we should be able to treat my daughter's MRSA, something that kills it completely, and that something is cannabis, and I should be able to do that as a parent and make that choice. And it angered me, so our group here in Idaho got together and we said, well, why don't we do another smokeout protest? We will protest this. We will protest that our children have to leave. We will protest that we have to leave. We will protest that we have to violate the law if we want, our own health. And so we planned it for New Year's Day, to go along with what we've been doing with the previous years. We put out the announcement, got a hold of the police, because we like to work with them. We like them to know what we're doing and to know that we're not, trying to cause problems. We're protesting. And so we planned it for January 1st, 2016. And on December 27th, 2015, I was a passenger in a vehicle where the vehicle was stopped and the driver was arrested. And I cooperated, to the extent until they wanted to bring a drug dog around the vehicle. Uh-huh. That is when I decided I wasn't going to cooperate any longer and that they needed a warrant, because they wouldn't tell me why they wanted to search the vehicle. All they would tell me is that they wanted to search the vehicle with a drug dog. And of course, my medicine's in my purse. I'm scared. I'm not getting out.
That's right.
Until they threatened to break the window on me and remove me from the vehicle. So I gave up that right. I gave up my right to be free of illegal searches and seizures without probable cause and a warrant, because they threatened me and intimidated me into giving up that right by telling me they're going to break the window and cause violence, in my vicinity. And they arrested me for obstructing delay of an officer, and then, of course, found my medicine in my purse. So I got a possession of a controlled substance charge and a possession of a paraphernalia. 3 days later, standing on the Capitol steps for a protest, they sent 23 police officers there. that wow. day. They believed that there were going to be hundreds of people doing this. So that's what the police think of the people in Idaho. They believe there are hundreds, and there are, but they believe that hundreds of people will come out on the steps and protest and light up joints in defiance, in civil disobedience. And with 23 cops there, had I not just gotten arrested, I never have probably would have even tried to light that joint. But I did anyway, and so I was cited for...
Good for you!
Well, I was mad again, because now I was in the system. Now I was going to be fighting it anyway. So I did. I took that charge. It came with paraphernalia charge for the dupe tube that my joint was in. And they
wait, Idaho is so petty, they're going to charge you for paraphernalia for a container. You can't, it's not, you know, most people would think paraphernalia is something you have to use drugs with, like a needle, you know, something that actually delivers the drug. The dupe tube? That's just sad.
Tube, you know, which costs $1 just across the border. At just the pipe shop across the border, they sell them the brand name dupe tube for $1. But it wasn't just that they charged me for paraphernalia. They also included in their description the black makeup case that I had the dupe tube in. And then also the bag that my stepmother had made me. It had pot leaves all over it. You know, she hand-sewed this for me for Christmas right before that. And I used that for the event to hold all my stuff in. And they included that as paraphernalia.
Oh, my God. So if you'd have had a Safeway paper shopping bag with handles on it, paraphernalia.
Pretty much. I do recall, you know, 20 years ago, people would talk about if you carried your weed around in a film canister, one of those little black 35-millimeter film canisters from the 90s, that they would charge you for paraphernalia for that if it had any type of residue in the inside. I believe that this paraphernalia law is a big part of their money maker.
Right. Well, it's a double charge because nobody's walking around with weed in their hand, right? Just carrying it in their hand or in their pocket. And hell, I'll bet if you carried it in your pocket, they'd charge your Levi's jeans as paraphernalia in Idaho. So, so it's a double charge, and then they can use that for leverage to get what they want.
Exactly. Yes. They can get you to flee out, you know, they'll say, okay, we'll drop the possession of a controlled substance charge. That's a drug charge. That's the bigger charge. As long as you plead to this paraphernalia charge, which still gets them their conviction.
That's right. So you are guilty of having something that carries drugs, but we won't charge you for the drugs.
Right.
Madness.
And that's what they offered me. You know, they said that they would drop the marijuana charges if I pled to the obstruct and delay and the paraphernalia and did a year of unsupervised probation and some community service. And, you know, that's a great deal for somebody who is just wanting to get through the system real quick. But what I saw was opportunity to fight back because that's what I do. You know, we're activists, right? So I took it to trial and I went through three public defenders and a paid attorney before I finally had to go pro se and represent myself.
Oh my.
And right now there's an issue with the Ada County Public Defender's Office and the ACLU filing class action and stuff because they don't represent people adequately. But even the paid attorney wasn't really wanting to do things the way I wanted to do it. I wanted to fight. I wanted my trial. I wanted my day in court. I wanted my witnesses. I had a Dr. Sunil Agarwal up from Seattle. He was willing to come down and testify for me. I had several other doctors available. I had 16 years of medical history to present to a jury. And we have the necessity defense in Idaho. The common law of England is enforced through Idaho Constitution and Idaho statutes.
And that don't know this, this actually was used successfully in Florida before they passed medical marijuana. An attorney named Michael Minardi successfully did some affirmative defense cases. And what they basically mean is, yeah, I broke the law, but if I didn't, I was going to die.
Right. Well, it's typically used in like prison escape situations where somebody who is going to die or get harmed in prison escapes. So they commit the crime of escaping from prison. But because we follow the common law of necessity, it was necessary for them to escape to avoid a greater harm. So they should be allowed to present a defense of necessity. And with that defense comes about three or four elements saying that, you know, you couldn't have brought the harm upon yourself. You had no other real options to negate that harm. There was an immediate threat of harm, you know, and there was no other real way to do what you needed to do to avoid the harm other than break the law.
And for those of us that are on the medical marijuana side of things, this happened at a national level with Robert Randall when he sued with an affirmative defense that he was going to go blind from glaucoma if he didn't get his medical cannabis. And that led to the federal medical marijuana program, of which there are still two patients. So this is a very smart move on your point, going for the affirmative defense on this. And so I guess I'm shocked that there was no activist lawyer in Idaho that could see the benefit of this kind of a attack.
Well, it was the public defender who actually filed for it for me. You know, he tried. And it was, there was a ruling, the Supreme Court, Idaho Supreme Court, has already ruled on the necessity defense in regards to medical marijuana. In 1990, there was a case in Coeur d'Alene with Lynn Hastings. She was growing cannabis and charged with felony cultivation, and she wanted to use a medical necessity defense because she used it for her arthritis. And she took a conditional plea saying that I'm guilty, except that I'm appealing, you know, because you're not allowing the necessity defense, because the judge said that there wasn't a necessity defense in Idaho. It went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled that while they're not going to make a medical necessity exception for marijuana, that there is the necessity defense in Idaho, and that Lynn Hastings had the right to present evidence as to necessity and have jury instruction and everything that she needed to present her defense of necessity. And so that's on the books, and that's what we were, you know, requesting. I wanted jury instruction saying that if I met these elements of the necessity defense, then, you know, I should be found not guilty. And I wanted to be able to present evidence and my expert witnesses. And the judge said no. And I got really confused. It was between the time where they were switching public defenders on me and I got a paid attorney. So the first public defender filed the motion. The second and third public defender didn't communicate with me, and the paid attorneys who argued the motion without ever having read it, because he didn't receive a copy of it either. It was just a giant mess.
Oh my.
And so finally the judge ruled, no, you can't do this. I asked my paid attorney to do a motion to reconsider. Thought for 6 months that was happening. It didn't happen. When it didn't happen and they wanted me to go to trial, I fired my attorney and I went pro se and requested a continuance so I can do it myself. The judge granted that. I filed my own motion to reconsider with 100 pages of evidence, a 12-page motion. To put it into perspective, the public defender filed a 3-page motion and a 5-page affidavit to support it, and I submitted hundreds of pages.
Right.
So to me, I felt that I had enough evidence, because the judge had ruled that I met every single element of the necessity defense, except he didn't feel I met the immediate threat of harm. Because he viewed it as me doing a general course of treatment instead of, you know, an immediate threat of harm. But there has also been, with the Supreme Court ruling with Hastings, the Supreme Court ruled that it's up to the trier of fact to determine whether or not the evidence supports the elements. And the trier of fact in the case is the jury, not the judge.
Right, right.
But so I was very confused, and I didn't know why that had occurred. So I filed an interlocutory appeal, which is an appeal before trial, and they denied me. And then so I took it to the next level, to the district court, and they denied me. And then I took it to the Supreme Court, and they denied me. And I think only – they didn't give any reason why. I think only on the basis that they wanted it from final judgment. So I had to go to trial without the necessity of it.
Hmm. Okay.
Right. So I had trial March 7th. I represented myself. They brought in police officer after police officer after police officer. And, you know, painted this picture of this woman who just hates laws, totally anti-authority, has zero respect and zero cooperation for any police officers or any figure of authority, and I believe that I'm above the law. Which, you know, looking at that I requested the necessity defense, I do believe that people in Idaho who are suffering from extreme disabilities and illness should be above that law. That is true. I do believe that.
And I'm wondering were any of these officers brought before you, any of the people you had to interface with in getting permits for lawful protests? I mean, it seems to me that someone who would be flouting the law would be holding, Boise Hemp Fest in the park with no permits, with no, I would think you'd have a strong cross-examination, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Well, with it's the Boise police we deal with for the permitting process for Boise Hemp Fest. And it was the Idaho State Police that I dealt with at the Capitol because it was the Idaho Capitol campus, so under their jurisdiction. And in the last few years, so the first year I tried to smoke the joint, they wouldn't let me even light it. And then they cited me. The second year, I didn't even try to light it. And I brought canna caps with me as well, CBD oil in capsules. And then the third year, we had one this year, and I didn't even try. I didn't even bring anything. I brought them donuts and coffee and cigarettes instead because those are legal drugs in Idaho. You know, they're worse than marijuana, but they're legal, and I made a point of it. And I gave them Krispy Kreme donuts, and it was a good time. And I have a really good rapport, I believe, with the Idaho State Police because I haven't caused problems. I haven't been trying to cause problems. They know what I'm attempting to do. It was the issue with the Ada County Sheriff with the obstruct and delay charge that the prosecutor felt that I would be, you know, they'd be able to view me as this just defiant person. But it was actually to my benefit that they brought all the police officers because I was able to show that, yeah, I don't get along with this guy who was trampling all over my rights. But hey, look at these guys, the Idaho State Police, they like me. You know, I cooperate with them and we got along great. And I was found not guilty of the obstruct and delay. And then I was found guilty, of course, of the six charges, the three marijuana and three paraphernalia charges. But I know if the jury had been given instruction that they could find me not guilty because of necessity, that they would have found me not guilty. Because my jurors were compassionate people. They're like every other person that I talked to on the streets working in Idaho. They wouldn't have found me guilty. I know it.
Yeah.
So now that I have a final judgment, I have the opportunity to appeal. So, you know, I tried for jury nullification, which is where the jury decides that, you know, this law should not be applied in this case, or we don't agree with this law, so they say not guilty. I tried for that a bit, definitely with the obstruction delay charge, but it, you know, the jury agreed with me that their cops need warrants to search people and vehicles. And that you don't have to get out of a vehicle unless they have probable cause, and they have to tell you about it. They can't just say, get out of the vehicle or you're going to jail. But the judge did tell them that they absolutely have to say guilty if I was found to be in possession of it. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I admit I was in possession of it. So yes. Of course I was found guilty. But had I had that jury nullification, I mean, I think that would have been great for Idaho. I think that it would have been great for Idahoans to know that you could say not guilty.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger problem here is that they're denying necessity of defense to patients. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it on the basis of a case that happened just recently with Douglas Myers. He was a man in Washington. He was a caregiver, and he was transporting cannabis to California. And for some odd reason, went through Idaho to do it. You know, anybody who's seen a map knows Washington, California. You don't have to go through Idaho. But he made that decision. And he was found with over 3 ounces, which, again, is a felony, you know, in Idaho.
Yep.
And he tried for the necessity defense, and the Supreme Court disagreed with him. They said, no, you don't have the right to necessity because you could have done something else for the 8 hours.
Yeah.
That you were in Idaho, or you could have gone around Idaho.
Right.
You know, that's not necessity. But it's this ruling that gives judges now the authority to determine the different elements of the necessity defense. So the judge in my case says that I meet all the other elements except for the immediate threat of harm. And even after showing him the immediate threat of harm for a condition like I have, which is a bladder condition, and without cannabis, I am in pain and I am in bed and I am 100 pounds heavier and isolated. And with that comes depression and suicidal ideation and neglect of my own children. And I will never go back to that. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's necessity to avoid that. Cannabis is the only thing that works for me other than opiates. And I don't want opiates. you know, the last thing that doctors in Idaho offered me was a morphine implant.
Oh my gosh.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows who I would be if I had accepted that? You know, I could be dead or worse. You know, where would, how would my children be cared for? So to me, marijuana, cannabis in Idaho is necessity. And I believe that the jury would have agreed with me. But they played their dirty trick and denied it.
Yeah.
And now I have to appeal.
Well,
and so that's what I'm hoping, is that I'll be able to go through appeals and the Supreme Court will agree with me like they agreed with Lynn Hasey.
That's what I'm thinking is, you know, the Supreme Court seemed to have said they needed to have something that came out of a case that was tried. And so now that you've got that judgment, it's kind of like the silver lining. Yay, I'm guilty. Now I can appeal.
Oh my goodness. I was so happy when they said guilty. I would have been happy when they said not guilty. And I was happy, of course, when they said not guilty for the obstruct and delay, because yes, we need warrants. And
yeah,
that means that justice, you know, the people can see that they know their rights, and that's good. That's good that Idahoans know that police don't have infallible authority. But I practically cried, and I actually had a juror wink at me when they were saying guilty, and they saw what I was doing as well.
That's fantastic.
But I don't think the prosecution noticed was that I had my medical records sitting on the table in front of me.
Uh-huh.
It was like a 3-inch binder that said medical records right across the side of it. So I think they saw that there was supposed to be more that was given to them, and I think they saw that I needed, you know, and maybe they even Googled me and found my blog and knew exactly what I was up to. I don't know. But,
maybe.
You know, what I see now is opportunity to say, hey, patients in Idaho who are sick and hurting and disabled and suffering deserve to have the ability to say, hey, I have a necessity for medical marijuana. And the jurors in Idaho should have the right to say not guilty when they agree that somebody has a necessity. They should have the right to say not guilty because they believe that the law should be different. And without that instruction, they don't even know they have that right. So I think that this might help us progress, or at least put some pressure, you know, in a different location other than the legislature or the initiative process or the public.
Yeah.
I have an opportunity through the court system, and that can help change laws. And I'm really blessed, actually, to
yes,
be facing 6 years in jail.
Well, let's keep on fighting. And do you have any web pages or support pages like GoFundMes or anything like that to help your defenses or your appeals or anything like that?
Unfortunately, GoFundMe doesn't like to give people help with legal stuff. If they find out it's legal, they shut it down. I do use PayPal, sarahfrank678@gmail.com. We are going into appeals. I'm actually on my way to Boise right now to meet with an appellate attorney. I'm not sure I'm going to take him or not because, you know, I don't have very much faith in attorneys these days. But I know that I do have expenses coming. In order to appeal, you have to get the transcripts. Those cost like $500. I will do everything possible. It will happen one way or another. I have no doubt. But if anybody wants to help, sarahfrank678@gmail.com for PayPal. Follow my blog at 420mommy.com, that's 420mommy.com. And of course, Boise Hemp Fest. .org, April 14th, Julia Davis Park, and then Legalize Idaho is our brand new, you know, just in its infancy effort that, you know, it'll help us a lot with, like you were saying, about how they're having to send a, you know, we're going to have to go up to Salmon and we're going to have to go up to all these little tiny locations. We're building teams around the state so that we don't have to do that. We
all
will
right.
have people in all locations, and we actually have one in Salmon.
Very good. So, folks, that's if you want to help out financially, sarahfrank678@gmail.com. And Sarah is S-E-R-R-A, Frank, like Frank, at 678@gmail.com. And I do believe there's a platform out now that's something like GoFundMe that is specifically for people that are doing lawsuits. Because I was reading a blog post or something on that the other day. If I find that information, I will send it to you. But Sarah Frank, you're amazing. I'm so proud of what you're doing. You're yet
another
one of my favorite female criminals. So good luck to you. We'll get you all the help we can, and good luck with this meeting up in Boise. Thanks for telling your story here on the Marijuana Agenda.
Thank you, Russ.